All right. Well, let's go ahead and tackle Colossians, or maybe we should say, let's be tackled by Colossians 2, 8 through 12. Let's see, do we have any volunteers who would like to... Zach, how about you?
Okay.
And why don't you...
I'm thinking we should talk through it.
Okay. First.
Like, no, together. Go through.
Okay.
Because if there's any discrepancies, and we've already, like...
And it's written a long it all out passage. So we'll talk through it together as it goes, as it parts of speech and function.
Yeah,
I'm all for that.
Okay.
Here we go. Why don't you grab that blue one there?
Okay.
I think that one looks pretty good.
Because I know you did it differently than us.
Yeah.
So it would be good to, like, before we have you just write everything.
Yes.
Let's do clauses.
Yeah, we could go clause by clause.
So, I'm going to do the first clause I have goes from here to here. With a
smart for a participle?
Yeah.
What makes you say that that's a participle?
Well, because pretty much the only the main point is see to it.
Uh-huh.
And that, I was debating whether or not to include that. I made that kind of in apposition. Actually, I made it, that, and this whole phrase in apposition to one another. What is it? It's that. What is that? It's that. I didn't really know how to... I mean, there's lots of different ways to do it. The way I diagram it when I teach it is different, but...
Where's the participle up there?
Well...
So you're saying it's a phrase then and not a clause.
Yeah. Well... let's see what I did as far as the verb goes. Takes would be the participle then.
I think it would... I'm trying to think of if it was what it would sound like. Because it does stand alone as a clause.
It does, yeah.
A participle will do that.
Yeah. Mm. So no one taking you captive.
Yeah.
Would maybe? I mean, I'm trying to think of.
Yeah.
What would make it a participle?
If it'll stand on its own, if it'll essentially make sense. No one takes you captive.
Yeah.
Then it's probably not a phrase.
Okay.
It's a clause. So you're right. You've got a big clause. See to it, and it goes all the way to rather than quick.
How do you diagram that then?
Well, let's not worry about that
yet.
Let's just call it what it is.
All right.
So now, what I want you to do, take those phrase marks out. Now put in like a little bit smaller clause. So what you've got is you've got a big clause, and you've got a clause within a clause.
Okay.
I don't know how you do it. Is that how you mark it? Do you show it that way?
I just did separate clauses, and on the diagram, I...
Okay, so did you go see to it as one, and here's another one?
I could see how you could do either, though.
Yeah, I think you got some freedom there.
I don't know if Smedley taught us to do
a clause.
The clause within the clause.
Okay. Yeah, I don't think
then
so.
Then let's change it then, the way that he does it, and just do see to it as one. And then we'll talk about how those two are related.
Okay.
Very good. Continue on with your clause.
All right. Let's see. So within, should I show what's going on in this clause, or should I go through and show all the clauses?
Should we do all the clauses, or do you want to just go verse by verse? Should you just keep going through, picking out clauses?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what would be most beneficial.
Go ahead and just do all the clauses. Let's just do clause. Yeah. And then we'll come back and
move
on. So let's pick up the four in him.
Clauses is the only thing we can do like this, because the rest of it's very like. How do these relate to this? Relate to this.
I'm not so sure about all my participial phrases anymore. Because I had
this is a participle phrase. Let's see. Destroyed him.
Can't do that. Yesterday, I think it was the day before on Rick Holland's Twitter, he's packing and moving. He tweets, got caught. Caught myself putting God in a box. And so there's a picture, so you click on the picture, and he's packing up, and he's got a box that's taped that says God on the box. It's funny. Sorry, it's funny to me. You shouldn't do that.
I'm in agreement.
On all that?
Yeah. Pretty sure.
I am as well. I think you did a good job on identifying your participles.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Good job.
That made without hands one's the most tricky.
Yeah.
Took me a while.
Okay. What do you want to do?
Let's do prepositional phrases. Yes.
As you do them, do you want to relate them to?
How about we do them within a clause and then?
Yeah.
We can finish this big one. Good. All right. Now, talk through each. Prepositional phrase.
Okay, so this is going to be adverbial because it's describing its see, basically how to see to it.
It's directive, it's telling you where to see.
Yeah, or where to see.
Good.
And then this is also going to be adverbial because it's going to all of these are going to talk about no one takes you captive. How are you taken captive? Through philosophy and empty deception,
or maybe the means through which the taking occurs.
The means through which, yeah. But all of them adverbial, talking about takes.
Good. Looks like we left through philosophy out.
Oh, did I leave that out?
But that's okay. It's all within the same.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Hold on. Philosophy and...
You want to put there? Okay, good.
Yeah, I missed that. Sorry about that. Hopefully we didn't miss anything else.
Philosophy and... Oops, not that. That.
There you go.
And empty deception.
Okay, so you got adverbial on all those.
Yep, adverbial on this too. And then this is going to be adjectival, because of men's describing tradition. This is also adverbial. And of the world is going to be adjectival again, talking about principles. According to Christ, adverbial. Talking about a different way to be taken captive. This showing that it's different from the rest of these things.
A rather than way of being taken captive.
What's that?
A rather than
way. A rather than way, yeah.
Very good.
All right. Okay. Next up. Okay. So fullness dwells is our subject and verb. And in him is going to talk, is going to be adverbial. Saying fullness dwells. In him.
Where
in him?
Okay, it's where.
Of deity, though, is going to be an adjective describing fullness. It's a fullness of deity. In bodily form is also going to be adverbial. Dwells how? Or in what means?
Good.
In him, you have been made complete. Okay. Have been made in him. Where? Adverbial. He's the head over all rule and authority. Describing. It's going to be adjective. Describing what kind of head? The head. What kind of head? A head over all rule and authority. Okay. In him.
Why didn't you just do this?
The reason I didn't do that, at least I don't do it in my diagrams, is just to show me that essentially all of this serves as, in the removal of the body of the flesh, all of that is, because...
It's an adverbial, adjectival type.
Yeah, it's the same thing that I'm doing here. All of this is adverbial. This adjective, though, is describing this part of the whole adverbial phrase. Like, because this is technically part of the adverbial phrase. It's not separate from. Does that make sense?
Sure.
You've done it the whole class, and it's been fine. And then, like, Smedley and I just break them all up individually. But it doesn't... That's helpful, especially when you're diagramming. And it doesn't make a difference to me, and I don't think Smedley.
No, but what you need to be careful of, the hang-up you could have is that you just there made an interpretive decision. You made an interpretive decision that this prepositional phrase has no chance of standing on its own equal to this one in a sentence.
Right.
And you might be right.
Right.
And another time, you might not be right.
Sure.
Okay. So.
Well, for example, like I could have done like what you're saying and just kept going and included by the circumcision of Christ, but I think it's a combination of looking at it here and then diagramming it and then adjusting it as I go.
And that's fine. Just recognize that the weakness, the potential pitfall of that is that you immediately now have locked yourself in. You made your decision, and now you're going to diagram according to it, and you may never, as long as you're open to reevaluating as you go, that's okay.
Just not locking in.
Paul, a lot of times, I mean, what you're going to have to do with his prepositional phrases, sometimes they are built within, like these are,
and this is relatively an obvious one.
Yeah.
This is describing body, and this is describing removal, and therefore it's all together. But on the bigger scale, it's not that way here. In the removal of the body of the flesh, by the circumcision of Christ, those are two different ideas, and where it's more obvious, you'll be okay. But and this, I'm just...
at first.
You're better off to look, in my opinion, I think you're better off to treat them as pieces separate.
Okay.
And then as you diagram, consider how they're all connected.
Okay.
You made the decision to make them all connected. That's okay to do. Just remember that as I diagram, I continue to go, I need to really be watching the pieces to make sure that it actually does confirm.
Okay.
So that's good. No problem.
Because it is a first step, and it's just parsing and not really interpreting, then it would be better to have them separately.
Okay.
Because then once you diagram, you put the puzzle pieces together, and then you might rewrite your...
Okay.
That was a good point.
You got it.
Yeah.
There's one.
Right.
And Zach, as you go and are studying and doing what you're doing, you know, you're going to develop, that may be something that you just start to get and you do it that way. There's nothing wrong with doing that way. What I'm trying to say is just recognize that you might lock yourself into something, and because you locked yourself into it, you might not reconsider it as you go. And you just want to be able to reconsider all the time as you go.
Yeah, okay. Right.
Start analyzing all of those.
Yeah, so...
In him, you are also circumcised.
Yeah. So this would be... adverbial. This... The in him here... there were two ways that I could see it being taken. One is adverbial, like I have it, which anytime there's an in, usually it's adverbial. But it also seems to, I just was wondering what you thought about making, if it was adjectival, saying it's a you that's in him, the you that's in him was or were also circumcised, or the you in him have been made complete.
Or
I don't know.
Or even, and we actually had different options on this. Or is it a complete in him?
Mm-hmm.
Now, and what you have here is a have been made is more like a linking. It's like a
right.
So the you and the complete are the same person, and so is the in him modifying you? Is it modifying the making, or is it modifying the
complete?
Oh, have
been made in him complete. Oh yeah, for
is
that
it
one
a,
it could be.
Is it an in him you that we're talking about? Is it an in him having been made, or is it an in him complete that you have? And so
theologically, it's... All of those are
all
true.
All those things are theologically true. And so then what you're going to look at is you want a good translation that, for the most part, will try to keep the prepositional phrase in the order in which it occurs in the Greek. It'll be clumsy English.
Mm-hmm.
But if you have an opportunity to go to the Greek, then you might look and see how close it is and start working your way towards where the closest is. That's not your key.
Right.
Because sometimes... Sure, because sometimes, I don't remember, but sometimes, you know, it'll just be put up front in the clause for emphasis.
Yeah.
And you've got to, personally, I said it was adjectival.
Okay.
Because I put it with complete.
Okay.
But you know, I think you can make an equally good case for it being adverbial.
Yeah.
Okay? So that's a good, those are good observations to be made. Same thing you can do here.
Is it a you in him? Is it a were? In him, or is it
circumcised?
Yeah, it
we're
depends on if you put that in with the verb.
So, oh, yeah.
And this is where, in English, to me, it's the Greek makes it a lot easier, because we're circumcised is that's your verb.
Yeah. Yeah, and I made it a verb. Yeah. Okay, so with the circumcision,
mm-hmm.
it's going to be... we're circumcised with a circumcision, so it's adverbial. Without hands is also going to be adverbial, but modifying made in the removal is modifying we're circumcised adverbial. Of the body is going to be adjectival, describing removal of the flesh. Adjectival describing body.
It's just a perfect passive participle, or the passive participle.
By the circumcision of Christ.
Paraphrased.
Adverbial.
What is that when you have a stated verb and participle with it?
Adjective.
A special grammar. I don't remember. And. You and him are being made for
the adverbial in that case.
They get the perfect sense from the participle, not from the verb. You are having been made. Complete. That would be the clunky word. You are being. You are currently having been made complete. So you. That's why I say when you have a when you have an Amy verb with a. It's got a special name. I think it's. I want to say it's paraphrased.
That sounds like it. So what does it result?
I think the point is that it all the more emphasizes the something done in the past with an abiding result. It just mm-hmm. emphasizes the present reality of a perfect action. All right.
Okay. So with him, adverbial modifying the having been buried in baptism as well.
Okay.
In which it's going to be adverbial. Modifying raised, or were raised.
Uh-huh.
With him, also were raised. Through faith, were raised. In the working, were raised of God, modifies working. Who raised him from the dead, adverbial modifying raised.
Okay, I'm good to go with that.
Okay.
And basically what you got left is subject and verbs. And,
yeah.
Do we need to make him go through and mark every word?
Well, we want
if you
well,
want.
Let's go through all the verbs and talk about
good.
There.
All right.
Okay. So we've got C is a verb. And it's, let's see. I have it as present active imperative.
Good.
And then takes is a verb. And this is going to be present active. I have it as a participle, but it's going to be present active indicative.
Yeah.
And then dwells is going to going to be our next verb here. Okay. This is present active indicative as well. Mm-hmm. Have been made is present perfect passive indicative. Yeah. Okay. Are you good on that? Present passive. Present perfect passive indicative. Is the next one, and this is going to be present state of indicative. What's that?
Smith's got it on the chart. Well, what would it?
What?
What would it be? So it's a past perfect.
What's a past perfect? Have been made? Because have is present. You had been made would be
had
past.
Had been made. Mm. Yeah, I was trying to work these words. It's not working.
Yeah, had been.
Correct.
And that's just indicative.
Yes, indicative on that one. And then is was present stative indicative.
Okay.
And then were circumcised. Is past passive indicative.
Mm-hmm. Past tense.
Mm-hmm.
It's passive. It's done to them.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's indicative. It's just a statement of reality.
It is now a state of.
Yeah. Okay. So that was the were circumcised. So now we've got
made.
And this is going to be past passive participle.
You sure it's passive?
It's a circumcision made without hands, so the circumcision's not making anything.
Correct.
It's being made by something, even though it's not said here. Having been buried.
It's actually a cake made. It takes on making.
Having been buried, present perfect again,
passive,
and participle. We're raised. Past passive indicative, and then last but not least, raised, which is past active indicative.
Well done. That right there is like somebody backing up to you and dumping all of the bricks that you need. And you've looked at all of them, and you've analyzed all of them, and you've got all the pieces. And now you need to put them together. And
yeah. So things, words up here that are confusing to me,
yeah.
That I don't know really what to do with, or really how to diagram it. I know what it means in essence, but is this word here?
That.
Yeah.
I don't know what to do with it. I don't know how to show. Oh, I know. I can show you what I did diagramming wise.
I didn't know either. So
I can give you a hint on how to handle that.
Okay.
Let me see what you did.
I stuck it okay. That. Okay.
Now what you can do if you want.
But see, this to me makes this not a separate clause, but a participle describing.
And that's because you don't have a category yet for how a clause can do that. Today, okay. You don't have a category for how a clause can do that.
Got it.
Okay. Okay, a clause, basically what you have it exactly right. You just need to get rid of the stills.
Get rid of the stills. Oh.
And basically, you just have a whole clause suspended there as a direct object. Or not the direct. Yeah, you see what? Or in the. What do you. Let me see what you have it at. Oh, yeah, as the object. It's like an opposition. Not opposition, but it's describing what the it is.
Okay, so I just need to get rid of that.
And you're good to go. And then if you want to, you can, in your mind, you know, almost kind of dot that, just that is all of the.
Okay.
A clause is functioning as the it. It's renaming it. Can you bring your breakout again?
The other option that I had that I got rid of was I had UC to it, and then I had a dot around it going up to that, and then that
it's
over
that. My guess is what the that is it's I'm gonna guess it's like a content word. It's gonna
tell you. Right.
Yeah. See to it. What is it? It's that. What is that? And then it gives you the clause.
You see this. Wait, what's the may? That's not verse A, is it? See to it. Oh, it's that no one.
That not anyone.
That's okay.
Is the
taking a captive?
Is this it? The taking captive.
What if he is not a participle?
Yes.
See, the English just substitutes it. It's a thrown in word that's not even corresponding to it, the Greek. So, another good reason to learn Greek. No,
yeah.
Just
so pretty much,
see no one
takes you to be a captive.
I did the same thing that you did, but I basically showed that I tend to circle it like it's a conjunction of sorts. When I see it, you don't have to. You can ask Smed. And I'm just showing that the it corresponds to all of this. It's a clause. One takes you, and then we can talk about what to do with captive and all of that. And it just hangs there telling us what the content of the it is.
Okay.
A clause can do that.
Okay.
A clause can just stand there and function as one part of speech. And just hang there in that spot and function as a noun or, you know, as a direct object, as the object of a preposition. Okay.
Well,
so, go ahead.
Where do you go?
We'll talk about that.
We'll get there.
All right, so let's do this. How about, we're in agreement with everything we got here, so let's go ahead and erase this.
Yeah.
And then before we really diagram all the exact pieces and everything, let's just put clauses up. And because Smed really wants us to begin to
block diagram.
Yeah, this is what he calls block diagramming. And this is helpful to kind of remove all of the clutter, and it's important clutter, but to kind of clean up the clutter. So, what we want to do is put those up. So we need to make sure that we've got, this is where I wish we had just a really big whiteboard.
Yeah.
And you can leave up those clauses. Will it help you? You want to write them up, Zach, or do you want me or Alex to write them and you can keep doing a couple things there? What do you want to do?
I mean, I'm pretty much done here.
Okay.
I just need to... So, I mean, I don't mind putting it up.
Okay. Let's have you do that. Do it. Okay. I think you'll just be able to do that. So, what we want to do is we're going to start up on your top left up here, just like you always do, and then just put your just your main guts of the clause.
Okay, so we're just going to start with the...
UC.
Subject, verb,
yeah.
Object, or whatever.
If there is an object, put it there.
Okay.
All right, so let's see. Just put UC. Okay. Just do your main line.
Like what I'm talking about is,
okay,
if you've got a main line,
okay,
just do that. Drop everything else. Now, what's the next clause?
Okay, so
yeah, take that.
We'll take that off. So UC is the first
clause. Where's the next place that you have a main line of?
Okay, so we're talking if we follow this line down.
I'm saying wherever you got a clause, a subject and a main verb, you got one there. Where's your next subject and main verb?
Right there.
The top left and top right of every clause.
Yeah. One takes you now.
So we're not following the vertical because there's nothing else besides UC.
Unless something follows.
Full.
What we're doing is we're analyzing relationships of clauses to clauses.
Right.
Where's the next clause?
One takes.
Okay, now before you write it down, we got to ask the question, where do we want to put it? See, because now we're talking about how it's related.
Got it. So
you could write it right here.
It's the object of the preposition.
Okay, so somehow it needs to be indented underneath or with it, in parallel with it. Or not in parallel with it, but it's connected to that one, right?
Right.
It helps flesh out. However you want. Okay. If you want to put it up here and you kind of got an arrow going towards it, you can, but just do the top main line with it.
Now, included in this top line, do you want direct objects?
Yes.
Okay.
Just no modifiers. Okay.
Okay. Now, I put captive on this line.
That's fine.
Okay. Do you want it on there?
Yeah, how did you do it?
Like that.
Okay. That's fine.
That would attribute captive to one.
No, it doesn't.
No,
you.
Oh, indirect.
Yeah. Yeah, because it's
so like it, so it'd be the line would be the other way.
No, it
wouldn't it?
Oh. No, well
yeah,
I should check the book again.
I just want to make sure because I think that's the one that points back to the subject.
Well, did you give me an example of a sentence?
If it's a linking verb and that's your predicate.
Yeah.
But when you put it after like this noun,
because there's a direct object.
Yeah, I think you're still showing that it goes back to the you. That's my understanding.
Yeah.
But
I looked at the diagramming book.
Okay.
Like the example was we elected Ted president. Mm-hmm. President modified Ted.
Okay, good. What are you trying to state with this? Captive is modifying
you.
Okay, so we're in agreement that it modifies you.
Yeah.
We can talk later about how we want to represent it.
Yeah, if that needs to change.
I was just thinking all the indirect objects. Is that what you're saying it is? Or is it predicate?
No, it's it would be a predicate adjective.
Okay. Yeah. Then that's
perfect. Okay. Alright, so you see one takes you captive. Next one is fullness dwells.
Okay, now where are you going to put that?
This is answering you see why. Because fullness dwells.
Good, so. Okay, fullness dwells.
Okay. Then you have been made complete. And that is just the next reason.
Start putting them closer together because you're going to run out of room.
Oh, and I'm writing really
That's okay.
too.
You're okay. Just starting now underneath there, just go right underneath it.
I had fullness dwells underneath one takes you.
Okay.
Kind of subordinate.
If this is a further fleshing out of
of the main.
I think it's got to go more with the you see to it. You watch. You be careful with this.
But this is dependent on this.
Well,
this
is dependent on that. Actually, this is dependent on these.
So should we put these first?
Not necessarily.
one takes you captive because fullness dwells, or you see because, or
I think it's hard because it's almost this is so related.
They're related, but I don't think it gets grabs the main point of what Paul's saying to say no one takes you captive for fullness dwells. He's not saying the reason nobody can take you captive is because
fullness dwells. I was thinking like it's hard because he gives like the negative and then the positive reaction to like the opposite and a reason for not doing so.
Right, but what if you're? I'm okay representing it this way. If what you are explaining is that you're not trying to break this off.
Yeah, no.
From that.
Yeah, that's what I was. I was trying to show that it's hard to explain how this is separate.
If we're saying, just a minute here, Zach. If we're basically saying that this is an idea, the main idea. Mm-hmm. If I position it more over here, or if I position it more over here, it really doesn't matter.
Yeah. I'm just making sure I was diagramming it.
Yeah, I think you're okay.
In explaining that, you just don't want to give somebody the impression that you don't know anything connected to that. Because you were circumcised. He is that you were circumcised.
Okay, now that is a part of. Okay, we're doing clause analysis.
Okay, sorry.
That's okay. So
not all the verbs, just.
No, just clauses.
Okay, here. Let me read this right here. Awesome. Well, in that case.
You're actually gonna, because your clause is dependent, or not dependent, but is a part of that phrase. It's gonna seem strange.
Right.
So let's go ahead and do this. Let's put your phrase back, just for now.
Which one?
You haven't been buried. The one I just erased.
Oh, okay.
Let's go ahead and put it in there.
Okay.
And we'll do it for a reason. But what I want you to do, you're saying that it has to do with, you put it, where did you put it? Did you put it right here?
I put it here because this you is going to refer back to this you. The you, having been raised, were circumcised. Here's my diagram.
Okay, there is no you on the having been buried with him.
Yeah. Which is why the you in parentheses is supplied by me, just because I'm saying that it's you were circumcised, and this I said that this having been buried refers back to this you.
And that's fine. Okay. You don't need to supply it to me to show that.
Okay.
Participles will work that way. So what you can do with you were circumcised is you can take it and just... As a phrase, just put it underneath here. If you're making an interpretive decision that is describing the you, you'll want to put it more underneath the you. If you want to say that it's modifying we're circumcised, then you put it more over here. I don't think it's necessarily renaming. Okay. What's your question?
I'm just wondering, like, here's how I diagrammed it. Because this is the you having been buried with him in baptism. All of this, essentially, is true about the you that was circumcised also in him. So on and so forth.
Yeah. What you did in this diagram is you made an interpretive decision that the subject up here
You were circumcised, so that you is this having been buried refers back to that you.
You made an interpretive decision that this participle down here, a verse later, is actually modifying that word you.
Right.
Deals with that. That's, you have to have something in the text that would warrant you to not put this with anything between here and there.
Right.
And what in your mind in the text warrants you to do that?
Okay. So in anything that you were circumcised for, it's the removal of the flesh by the circumcision of Christ. Having been buried with him in baptism, in which you also raised up with him through faith.
It is confusing.
Yeah. Well, the... So you were circumcised. Having been buried with him, which you were also raised up. So, okay. Having been buried with him in baptism. So the with him referring back to Christ.
Mm-hmm.
So the having been buried with him shows that it's not Christ who's being buried here.
Mm-hmm.
And then in which you were also raised up with him, this goes back using the you. It's the same you. So that would be my reasoning, I think, for saying that all of this, because this having been buried, having is being a participle. Anyway, I would link this back to that for those reasons. Even though it's separated, it seems to describe you were circumcised. Here's the condition or the description of who this you is.
And that is, we know that that's theologically true, right?
Right.
That we were buried with him in baptism. You're not onto something heretical by any means.
Right.
It's theologically true. What you have to confirm is that what Paul's trying to say here.
Mm-hmm.
We know that participles can certainly modify a noun.
Mm-hmm.
Participles can also modify verbal ideas just as easily. And so, why did you not say that having been buried is a way of modifying your circumcised?
Circumcision.
A manner in which circumcision was done. The way that
you were circumcised
was done is God buried you with Christ.
I think the reason I didn't do that is because...
If you were to choose which you to attach it to, it would seem more logical to attach it to the second one. Is that what you did, or
the you were raised?
Mm-hmm. Because the idea of raised kind of has to do with the baptism.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think that necessarily follows because you have that in which connected back to baptism. So that would be a really funky circular.
It would be
diagram.
Like the having been buried with him in baptism, you were raised. You know what I'm saying? And that would. I'm just giving other options. I'm not trying to contradict what we decided about. Circumcised, but.
And by the way, this whole process right here, Zach, of talking through it and even in putting things in the wrong place, if you do put things in the wrong place, is only a great benefit, because the more you study and then you start going to commentaries, and as you check other things out and you're cross-referencing, what you're going to do is, if let's say you picked to put it a wrong place, Now you're going to know all the more reason why it wasn't that and why it must instead be the right way, and you'll be able to explain it much better to somebody else.
I think another reason why is just because of the punctuation too, how there's a semicolon after Christ, and then it's like there's a break in the thought, and so then this next phrase, which so, because there's this participial phrase, I don't know, it stood out to me, and so because of that break, I thought maybe it would go back to refer to the you.
The way in which you've done it here, there's another way to represent what you're thinking that's probably a little better than this.
Okay.
By you putting it like this, you're saying that I've got to jump through all of this to get back to this you. And the way that you're representing it physically in this diagram is that the way that you're representing it here physically this way is not a way that Paul is writing it here.
Right.
If he were making the you the subject of this participle having been, he would not separate it so radically.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, he would be required to actually have the pronoun you there in the Greek. And I'm pretty sure he doesn't. I think we're implying this you in English. So, which means that his main idea is that the you is just a part of the main verb. Now then, since you're wanting to connect it to the subject, what would be a better way to represent that?
Okay.
Well, how do you imply a pronoun in a participle versus not?
You don't. Yeah, I mean, if it's there, if there's a subject to the participle, it's got to be put there for you.
Yeah, it's just having been buried with him.
On it. That makes more sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, what you're able to communicate then is what you're still testing, that you think it's modifying the subject.
Mm-hmm.
But what you're doing is you're allowing it to flow later in the passage where it comes.
Right.
So really what we're asking the question is where is having been buried? As a phrase, what is it modifying?
Yeah.
And you've got to answer the question. It's either modifying the you.
Yeah.
Or it's telling us something about the we're circumcised.
We're circumcised. Yeah. And actually, now that I think about it, I mean, in English, if you have a participle phrase like having been buried with him in baptism, you were circumcised.
You would put it down.
You would, if it comes later, it would be a dangling participle, which you can't do in English.
I think something to remember too about punctuation is it's interpretive.
Sure.
And that's what's hard too. If you're getting tripped up on a semicolon, remember that it's not inspired.
Right, right.
Yeah, one of the best things. In fact, I know some friends who do this when they're analyzing, passage in English, like if they cut and paste from Blue Letter or from Libronix, the first thing they do is they go in and they delete all of the verse marks and all of the punctuation.
Yeah.
So it's just the words. because then you can be, you have a chance then to, you know, maybe not be persuaded by that. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's not a, you know, the punctuation is helpful at once. Yeah, you just have to recognize that it's interpretive.
Mm-hmm. The same as chapter divisions.
Yeah. Sure.
That's really confusing when you're first reading.
Yeah.
Like, I thought that they were written in chapters and verses for years.
Oh, no, no, no.
And then realized it's just a letter.
Yeah.
Yeah. The online version I use doesn't have chapters or verses. It's just solid.
It's good. So, most likely, I mean, this would be something that you'd want to chase as you as you later are maybe going to some commentaries.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to want to test that.
Right.
Do the guys, you know, giving comment on this think that having been buried modifies the you, or is it telling us something about the circumcision that was that took place on them?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you'll want to watch.
Okay.
And what, logically speaking, what is essentially the difference? It's not a massive difference.
Uh-huh.
Because this is a passive verb that's being done to you.
Right.
But it is different in the sense that the only way that I would make the case that it's modifying were circumcised.
Okay.
Regardless of you, the only way this spiritual circumcision takes place is through having been baptized or buried with Christ. That's the way God performs this circumcision that is made without hands. He buries you with Christ.
Okay.
So that would be the way. But let's go ahead and do this for now. Let's put up put having been buried right there, and put it where you know where you're going to kind of tie it closer to you, and go ahead and put it on stilts, just not very big ones, just so that we can see that it's a phrase. Okay, there you go. Now continue on with your clause analysis, because
okay.
Now you'll be able to say, now we have the relative clauses, is that right?
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and underneath here, just put, don't write all of the prepositions, but just do
in baptism,
just so that you can see the logical connection.
Right. Okay, so in...
Or not the logical connection, the actual...
The actual...
Grammatical connection.
Yeah.
Now you can put your...
We're
raised.
We're raised.
28 is not raised.
All right. Yeah, and then put your next one.
And this is what refers back to that.
Okay.
And then we also need...
We'll supply another one. Do
through faith in the working of God.
Let's not put all of that, but
just
let's do...
of God.
Yeah, just do a... Just even dangle of God off over here for a second. And then... Yeah. Good. All right, so now you see... you've got primarily one big main idea that Paul is concerned to communicate. You watch, you see, no one takes you captive.
We've got one more here really quick.
I'll do it?
Yeah. Let's just do with...
Oh, mate, is this the mate without hands?
Mm-hmm. I'll just do.
Okay, that's fine. Good. So you got one main idea that he's concerned to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else is a part of the explanation.
of the one main thing. So now you're thinking, as you're running this through your own heart, as you're thinking about your, you know, who you're going to communicate this to, I'm going to need to communicate primarily that there's one main thought with an extensive explanation. Okay?
You can teach us in one sentence.
With four primary explanations. Why must you be watchful? Well, because fullness dwells. The fullness of God in Him dwells in bodily form, and I need to watch because I have been made complete in Him, and I need to see that I don't get taken captive by this. And by the way, the prepositional, we'll walk through the prepositional phrases on this.
Yeah.
And you see, because He is the head over all things, nobody can take me captive if He's the head over all things. That can't be allowed. And well, because I was circumcised, and you know what this is? This is a radical conversion. Okay, a radical separation of flesh from me has taken place. Of having been buried. Part, you start working through what the main idea, what you're looking at here is you're looking at skeletal structure, you're looking at the main things you've got. So what this is especially helpful for, Zach, is helping you to see already your outline is flowing right from the text.
Mm-hmm.
Right? How you're going to present this to people comes right from the text. This is why diagramming is so helpful. Mm-hmm. And why you want to at some point kind of take the clutter, the divine, wonderful, inspired clutter of prepositional phrases and things, and just kind of move them off for a moment to see the main clause ideas, because it'll become more readily obvious to you than... You know,
yeah.
it's more difficult to see.
Right.
So, four reasons why we cannot be taken captive to wrong ideas.
Mm.
Number one. And here's your outline.
Right.
It begins to flow. Now, you still got to go back then and put all the prepositional phrases in and be able to explain and do all of that. So,
right.
What Smed's wanting to accomplish here in clause analysis is just help you to see more clearly how the passage is, what Paul's main flow of thought is,
mm-hmm.
and help you to see that it gets you very close to, oh man, I can package this. Mm-hmm. And again, you've got a packaging that comes right from the text. It'll do the work for you because you did the hard work of all the analysis. Look, I mean, it's just screaming for you to communicate, and it did the work for you.
Yeah.
But not if you don't dig into it and analyze like we're doing.
Yeah.
So that's the main idea of doing the bones like this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Let's do a couple of things here. With I'll show you why we went with doing the prepositional phrases kind of the way we did. As we talked about them. And if you make that primary change where you're going to put it down like there, then all of this comes
right.
along with it.
Right.
And then I think you're very, very close to what Alex and I did.
Okay.
And the only difference would be that we put having been buried under the verb and you put it under you, and that's what you'll just want to chase and
right.
and figure out. All right. For the sake of, I'll show you what we did. Takes. Thank you. good here. Here's verse 8. Now this is we would want to test this as we continue to go through and study.
Okay.
See to it that no one takes you captive. The manner in which they're taking you are through philosophy and empty deception. Mm-hmm. I abbreviated here. Deception. See to it that no one takes you according to the traditions of men. Mm-hmm. See to it that no one takes you according to the elementary principles of the world. Mm-hmm. Contrast, we put this as some kind of a conjunction, rather right. than according to Christ. Now, this doesn't make sense to say, make sure no one takes you captive according to Christ. Well, no, but that's these are in contrast to these. So what we did, there's a lot of different ways you can represent this, but what we were thinking, what Paul was doing, is Paul is saying, if there's going to be any way that you are taken captive, mm-hmm. it's just according to Christ. It must come according to Christ. And notice how in putting it this way, where you're contrasting according to Christ with these three. I mean, even just visually, this is just, I mean, there's a lot. It's just, philosophy, empty deception, tradition, according to principles. You know what? It's actually very simple. It's just according to Christ. Mm-hmm. Instead of all of this fanciful stuff that people try to capture you with, it's just really actually very simple. There's just one thing in contrast to all that man will try to clutter your life with and take you captive with. It's that. That's why we did it this way, and then all of that is modifying. Another option would just simply be, you're going to have through, according to, and you're just going to run them all like this. Up.
Right, like that.
Yes.
Okay.
Now, what is the difference? We're saying then, this is according to
right.
Christ. What's the difference between the way that this structure says it compared to the way that this structure says it?
Yeah, this would say that it's this rather than this, as opposed to these things rather than this.
Yeah. What this represents, I think, in a way yeah. different than this, is that you're setting this one thing off and against and in contrast to these all other threes. It's not just a fourth thing among okay. three others, but that it's an actual contrast off of three other things.
Okay.
I like this a lot more. That would be more Pauline. It's, you know, that represents a very Pauline idea. In fact, I think it even in this passage, with all of the explanation that follows. Mm-hmm. But that right there, I mean, let's say you decided you were going to teach this to your people, and you study all 8 through 12. You might go, you know what? I'm going to do this in two messages. Message number one is, see to that no one takes you captive. Okay, there are three means by which we are taken captive. One, two, three. And then there's the amazing contrast that Christ is, or whatever, you know. So
isn't it being taken captive according to Christ, though? Isn't that the logical flow? See to it that no one takes you captive.
Yes.
In these ways, rather than being taken captive according to Christ.
Yeah, and this is where language just kind of breaks down a uh-huh. little bit.
Well, I see that as being poetic.
It is, but it's I'm not sure his main idea is
don't be taken captive this way, but be taken captive this way. Because he started off with such a negative idea, mm-hmm. he's not trying to put a spin on it. He's just doing what you do when you're rattling through some clutter of this kind of stuff. It's you just give the contrast without implying a verbal idea necessarily, or without implying the same verbal idea.
Right.
It's just Christ. It's like saying, look, don't be taken captive of this, and don't be taken captive according to that, and don't be taken captive according to this. It's Christ.
But what happens when you become captivated by those three things? You become excited, entrenched, all these things. And so it's not, I mean, it's to forsake those things and come under Christ.
Yes.
It is pretty significant.
Yeah.
I don't know if it has to carry the same verbal idea, but I'm just thinking, if that's the contrast, there is something to be said about what happens when you're according to Christ.
Absolutely.
And it is just, because according to Christ is still attached to no one takes you
captive. There's no other place to put it. But because there's no other place to put it, I'm not sure that you want
just
to
say
just
verse.
Say it's, yeah. I think
well, that's what's nice, though, is it immediately after comes four reasons for why you're watching out for being taken.
It's almost like this sets you up for his explanation. It does set you up for his explanation. Let me tell you about how it's all according to Christ. But his point is not so much to tell you, here's how we're taken captive by Christ.
Right.
You know. So you have to be careful with your language, and you'd have to figure out how you're going to communicate that.
Right.
Here's how people are easily taken captive. But look at just the simplicity of it. And look, then you're set up.
You could, in a sense, discuss freedom according to Christ.
Yeah.
Because it's still that contrast to captivity.
Right. And it's just, what's very telling about this is, look, this is the way the world system, this is the way worldly men try to grab people, even try to grab weak, immature believers. Look, it's too big. This is Genesis 3. Here's the serpent, his seed, coming after the rest of us, like he went after Eve. Lots of high knowledge and big ideas and questions,
deception that seems
elementary principles of the world, things that go all the way back to them, you know. No, it's just Christ. We don't, and look, you don't have to have three spiritual good things to balance out these three bad. It's just
right.
It's just Christ. I love that.
Man, why don't you preach this as part of the Genesis series?
That'd be Smed's call.
Yeah. Let it be your first message post.
Well, that's my make that call. Alright, so I think everything else, Zach, that you have, we're just turn in what you got. I think you'll be good, and we won't take any more time on that here because we'll be able to cover what else. But
so you were saying this could be one message to kind of introduce the you see no one takes you captive, and then the next message would be here's why.
Okay. Here's the ways that we are taken captive, and here's the reasons why we cannot be taken captive.
Okay.
And see, that's what's when you've got the benefit of or the privilege of being able to, you know, small group Bible study, evangelistic thing, preaching, whatever you've got, you can decide to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you have to do it all in one, this part's going to be much shorter.
Right.
Because it's prepositional phrase, and that doesn't mean it's not as important as the clauses that follow, but well, kind of is too, you know, not as important. So you'd have to figure out a way to condense that all. So anyway, who'd have thought that, I just tell Alex everything, you come to this passage and you're like, oh man, I'd love to be able to use this, but man, okay, now I got to explain circumcision. And then I got to explain baptism, and which baptism is not what it is and what it isn't. But I tell you, this is a rich passage that would be well worth explaining, walking through all of the baptism stuff. So.
And the cool thing too is, especially for like Bible study, small group type stuff, doing this diagram and spending the time just sets you up for being able to teach it.
Yeah.
You could take this, study, pretty much take your main clauses, study what all those prepositional phrases are, and figure out what they mean, and then teach.
Yeah. And doing it wrong and getting wrong ideas about a clause or a phrase first, and then, you know, a day later, as you continue to study, you make the correction. That wasn't wasted time.
Right.
That was so helpful, because now somebody else makes the same conclusion maybe that you did. Mm-hmm. How much more are you equipped to be able to say, oh, now let me tell you why it's not that way and this way instead. Let me tell you. And, you know, you're just all the more equipped to be able to talk through it. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, let's turn the corner. We need to cover a couple more pages in our booklet here. We're jumping a little bit out of order, Zach. Oh, you know what I want to do too? I have some info to tell you about your papers and stuff, but let's cover
okay.
the pages here quickly. We're going to be on pages 36 and 37 today. That's not true. We're going to be on page 38. No, wait, what did I say to do today? I changed everything up. We're going to go to page 40 and 41. Okay.
Okay.
Now, because I'm covering them out of order does not mean that you should study and prepare out of order.
Okay.
So, page 40 and 41 is step 9, 10, and 11. Read commentaries, problem solve, and develop an exegetical proposition. Okay?
So the only one, just to be clear, that we're doing out of order is we haven't touched Trace the Trajectory of Scripture, number 7.
Yeah, we'll
everything else we've covered, that's just 38.
Correct, and we're going to do that actually tomorrow morning.
Okay.
Trajectory is tomorrow morning. And then we have to do pages 17 to 22. We haven't covered those. And that's going to be next Tuesday.
Okay.
Okay.
Were you doing something for a small class?
Yeah. We'll just work it together tomorrow. Okay?
Okay.
So pages 40 and 41, commentaries. Here's where guys run first most of the time mm-hmm. when they're studying, when they're dependent on other men to be able to help them understand. They tend to run to commentaries first. Commentaries, you want to avoid two extremes, I think, on the commentaries. One is, I'm just going to go to them first, and whatever they say is what I'm going to say. That would be an extreme to avoid, and that is one a serious extreme to avoid. I think another extreme to avoid that's probably not as bad as that is commentaries are bad, and therefore I'm not going to go to them. Or if I go to them, I might look at them. You know, you might give them a side look at the end. God gifts the body with teachers, and some of these gifted teachers throughout the ages have actually written their words down. And we can benefit from them, right? So how should we see commentaries? Commentaries are a tool to help you observe the text. And this isn't written anywhere in there because this is me, but a commentary is nothing more than a tool to help you observe the text. If you need to use that tool sooner than later, you shouldn't feel guilty mm-hmm. because, well, I'm going to commentaries.
Yeah.
It's all why you do it. A commentary is a tool that you use to observe the text. There are some times where, in fact, Smed even says here, by this time you've already skimmed or read significant portions of the commentaries available to you, even though it's step 9 and not step 1. But commentaries have been a part throughout. And if you haven't done it yet, this is a great time to read through those commentaries. Okay? Take notes on places that commentators differ from each other. Take note of places that commentators differ from you. Hmm. Commentaries are a great tool to keep you accountable. If you find yourself interpreting a passage in a manner that no one else in all of church history ever has, you might want to go back and check your work.
Yeah.
you don't want to be the first guy discovering a new quote unquote, you know, truth that nobody else has. A reading of good commentaries will help you overturn some stones you didn't think to turn over, and to ask some questions that did not come to your mind, to think of possible solutions, to interpret questions that did not occur to you. This is an important step worth taking some time on. I think you don't need... let me give you an example. When I was going through Ephesians, I think I started with about 24 commentaries that I was looking at after I did my diagramming and all that stuff. By the time I got about halfway through chapter 1, and I had an idea of which guys I wanted to start with, you know, because I put them in a pecking order that I can best tell. By the time I got, you know, even halfway into chapter 1, my first commentary was knocking out anything that the last 8 guys, or even 10 guys, could say, because he said it better, and he said it all. That's Honer's commentary. Mm-hmm. And so by the time we got done, I found, you know, even if I put them on my desk, you know, Honer, and then prioritize them down, by the time I was getting to halfway through chapter 1 preaching, and I was getting to the last 8 guys, I'd be opening them up to look at them and go, nothing new there. Mm-hmm. Nothing new there. And after doing that about 3 times, those guys came off of my list,
right,
went back up on my shelf, and I was left down with like maybe 10 commentaries that I was looking at. Because it was wasting my time to continue to look at guys who weren't adding anything new to it. But I didn't know that until I got into the study. So
right.
You'll learn to put a pecking order. There, Sven says here, there's a variety of types of commentaries. You should consult some of each. Big picture commentaries, these are either very brief works on a book of the Bible, or they can be a whole Bible commentary, or they can be notes in a Bible study. And here's the benefit of a whole Bible commentary. In one volume, one commentary in the Bible, is they're going to look at your passage, and they're not going to be able to deal with it with as much detail as you are. And so they're going to have to summarize your passage, mm-hmm, in a paragraph, or maybe just even a sentence. And you need to see guys who have tried to summarize your passage in a sentence, because that's what you're trying to do.
Right.
Right?
Right.
You're trying to say, this is what this passage is all about.
Mm-hmm.
And they've done that for you. So you want to look at a guy who's flying over your passage at 30,000 feet, mm-hmm, and that's going to be helpful to you. Devotional commentaries. These are geared toward ready application by the reader. These will be very light on technical discussions of grammar, because we all know that if you pay attention to grammar, you can't be devotional.
Right. Yes. Right? Of course.
Mm-hmm. So, but for the most part, for whatever reason, guys who spend more detail on the grammar and syntax and things like that tend to be less warm. And this is what I loved about Honer. Honer, I think, in Ephesians, was both. He was impressed by the God that was bound up in the grammar. That's what you're looking for. So you're going to want a devotional commentary where somebody's just really warm and writing something that's just like they're impressed by the greatness of God in the passage. Homiletical commentaries are another kind of commentaries. These are printed versions of preached expository sermons. These commentaries will hide, quote unquote, most of the exegetical research of the author preacher, because most preachers don't bring all the exegetical baggage into the pulpit. They've done all that work. It would be like somebody taking your lesson and then typing it into a chapter.
Mm-hmm.
James Montgomery Boyce has... all of his commentaries are this way, and for the most part, MacArthur's commentaries are this way. They're expositional commentaries. They're, mm-hmm, commentaries on passages that come from a sermon. Those are helpful. You want to look at those because that's what you're trying to do, too. You're trying to teach it, and you, mm-hmm, want to see how they packaged it and how they explain content to their audience. So that's helpful. Martin Lloyd-Jones is another example.
Okay.
Then you want technical commentaries. These commentaries deal with the original languages, grammar, text, critical issues, historical background, archaeology, literary context. many commentaries that are thorough and they're dealing with the original languages and grammar can be very also, unfortunately, liberal in their theological perspective. For whatever reason, guys who tend to get more caught up in the grammar and the academics of it just tend to be more liberal. The text might not even in their minds be inspired. And so you have to be very careful as you are using technical commentaries.
Now, Homer's would be Honer. Technical.
His name is H-O-E-H-N-E-R. Honer.
Honer.
Yeah.
Honer would be technical.
Yeah, he'd be technical. His commentary on Ephesians is like that thick.
Okay, yeah.
And he...
you want that because he'll turn over words and deal
with
what
we were dealing with
Greek.
Here about how this prepositional phrase relates to the ones before it, he might have a page on it.
Okay. Awesome.
So, yeah, you want something like that. So, if you had an all-Bible commentary, one-volume commentary, if you had a devotional commentary, and you had a homiletical commentary, and you had a technical commentary on every passage of the Bible, you'd have a great place to start. A great place to start. The only thing that maybe I would add to the notes here is a different dimension. If you could have a commentary from the Reformation, Calvin, and then you could have a commentary from 18th, 19th, 20th, early 20th century, and then you could have a modern day commentary, what you're going to find is Calvin battling the papists. And then you're going to find a conservative in the early 1900s battling liberalism. And then you're going to have a guy in our day battling liberalism in another way. And you're going to you're going to watch these guys interact with the same truth in really unique ways according to their context. And so that's helpful. Mm-hmm. And now whether or not it's technical, all of those from different eras have to be technical, or they all have to be devotional, or they all have to be expositional. That doesn't matter so much.
Probably be hard to find.
Yeah, but what you want is you can benefit greatly from listening to guys who come from different redemptive or church history eras, and so that's helpful. So you want old commentaries, you want new commentaries also.
Mm-hmm. And you totally skipped like 1600 years.
I did. That's because they don't matter. Even if you got something you can get from an early church father, that's good too. I mean, I'm not trying to.
They're a little bit crazy though.
Their hermeneutic at points was scary. Some of them, most of them. All right, so there's your commentaries. Read commentaries, and again, a commentary is a tool to help you observe the text. And if you need to look, I do this. I'll be honest with you, I do this often. If I'm looking at it and I'm trying to diagram something, and I'm like, man, I am completely clueless, I will not hesitate to go to Lenski. I will not hesitate to go to Honer. I won't hesitate to say, because I'm going to read to see how he handles it so that I can be informed if whether or not I go, oh, of course, why didn't I think of that? Or, what? I'm not going to do it that way.
Have you ever read Greenlee?
Greenlee?
Yeah. Huh. His whole commentary, all it does is highlight all the pros and cons for all the problems.
Oh wow! Is that on one book of the Bible or?
I know he has one for Philippians.
Okay.
But I'm assuming he's done works like
More.
It or his series.
Okay.
It's like that because it doesn't. It kind of gives his interpretive decision, but he just goes through every verse and puts about
five or six.
You know,
it's like
does this relate to this?
Yeah.
And so it's kind of nice because he shows the other options for
That's
you.
That's great.
That's another good example of a commentary to use. It's kind
what
of
is
technical.
That? Greenlee?
It just at least for Philippians. Greenlee, Philippians.
How do you spell his name?
Greenlee.
It's Green and then Lee.
Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure.
L-Y?
I can check. L-E-E.
L-E-E.
Let me make sure.
All right. Problem solving number 10. Step 10. If there are any yet unresolved interpretive decisions to make, develop a plan to solve them. You'll be studying at some points, and there will be a problem, and everybody will acknowledge it's a problem. Some of the guys will take a stab at trying to solve the problem, and by the time you get to this point at the, towards the end, you will not be satisfied at all that the problem has even been resolved. You at this point want to do your best at it. And we've talked about this in other contexts before. I think this is where expositors or teachers today need to man up and say, here are three different ways of looking at this problem, and I'm going to pick this one. To the best of my understanding, I'm going to pick this one, and I'm going to pick it with the amount of conviction that I can hold it in. I'm going to do it humbly, but I'm going to do it with conviction. I'm going to make a decision. I sat and listened to in the church that we went to out in California when we first got married. A guy was preaching through the Gospels, and he came up to a point. It was a difficult spot, and I can't even remember what the point was. And he said, "Well, obviously, it's one of two options here. It's either Christ means this, or Christ means that." And both of them were hard sayings. And he said, "Which one is it?" And I'm sitting there, you know, and he's just like, "I don't know, but I wouldn't want to be either." And he moved on.
Yeesh.
And I was like, oh, you know, put the pants on, put your belt on, tighten it up, be willing to step out there and make a decision. You might be wrong. You might come back later and change your position. But make a decision. There's nothing wrong with, I think we need to be pushed to solve the problem and state it the best you can. Hold to it humbly, but that just holding to it humbly doesn't necessarily mean you're uncertain. Be certain as much as you can be. Got to do your homework. The times when you're least willing to commit is when you just haven't done your work. So when you come to those passages that you really haven't studied yet, it's hard to be certain. I'm not saying don't be certain on those. If you need to be uncertain on those, be uncertain because you haven't done the work. But if you did your work, and you studied, and you did all this kind of stuff, and you recognize there may be some very well-respected men over here in this category that disagree with where you think you're going, hold your position with certainty. Based on what I've studied, I'm willing to stand on the other side of the debate with these guys. Just do it humbly. Last, step 11, or I shouldn't say last, or should I say this? Yes, last, step 11. Develop an exegetical proposition. Ask and answer the question, what is this passage all about? You want to attempt to sum up your passage in ABC, accurate, brief, and clear sentence. Write and rewrite your exegetical proposition. Try to write a new exegetical proposition at every step in the hermeneutical process. When I read through this, that was really helpful for me. That's something that I tend to do anyway. I start to get ideas, but I want to be more intentional and writing it, because I think that'll help me to become more accurate, brief, and clear. I wrestle greatly with being accurate, brief, and clear in wording what the passage is about. Keep refining it all the way through your study. Can your exegetical proposition be understood by a sixth grader? If not, keep working. The goal of an exegetical proposition is to say what the passage means in a summary statement. This is not necessarily a sermon thesis or an application to your life. This is a short answer to the question, what does this passage mean by what it says? You're going to find guys at different points along a perspective. I'm, as a preacher, by my own convictions, closer to the side that my sermon proposition is going to be closer to an exegetical proposition. Because my conviction is that when people hear my sermon, I want them to walk away not remembering my sermon. I don't want my sermon to be, I want my sermon to almost be an invisible medium that makes people impressed with the Word of God and the God of the Word. That they would walk away and say, you know what? That passage is awesome. This morning, on my run, I listened to CJ's sermon on Jude 1b, mm-hmm. again from Resolved, and I found myself tempted because he is so persuasive and he's so, to me, engaging. Mm-hmm. At one point as I was listening, I was just thinking, this is an amazing sermon, and I caught myself and I said, no, that's an amazing verse, called beloved, kept. That's what I want. I want my sermon to push people towards thinking and remembering the text. That's why I say, 99 times out of 100, what is this passage all about? At the beginning, this is what this passage is all about. My sermon, I want it to serve to highlight what the passage is about. I want to apply, and I want it to engender worship in me and in other people, but I want it to be about the passage. There are times, if you listen carefully, when I do a sermon, if I'm not rooted in one text only, I will at that point say, what is the sermon all about? The sermon is about my last one I remember doing on this was from Ephesians 6, the way that we fight, the way that the devil is in real life, because we're talking about the armor of God. And so I did a sermon that was kind of a survey, and I couldn't say, what is this passage all about? Because I was in a bunch of passages, and so I actually said, what is this sermon about? I have really dear friends who are closer to the other perspective, on the other side of it, where they have a sermon proposition that they don't have an ill motive in trying to put distance between their sermon and the text. They love the Bible as much as I do, more than I do, but they want a package that is for the moment, for the preaching moment, going to really serve the people. And so whether or not the outline is as clearly related to the text in its grammatical, syntactical form, they're not as concerned about that. Where I'll be more concerned that my outline will look more like it just came right from the text, like these three things are right from there. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah.
God uses those.
Were you saying, was CJ's more like the... the latter?
No, okay. I don't think so.
Okay.
And I don't want to drive a wedge between them, because his points came right from the verse.
Sure.
My points would come right from the verse. I wouldn't come up with four things. There's only three things there.
Right.
But what I found myself, I don't want to be impressed with a sermon.
Yeah.
So much as I want to be impressed by what the Word of God says. I want to be able to come back to that passage and go, oh my goodness. And thank you, CJ Mahaney, and a sermon for making me love this passage better. I don't want to see that verse and go, man, that last night of resolve was incredible. I'll say that too, but that's not... I want to just... To me, it's a safeguard in my mind that I want the sermon to be in a very low servant place and the text and the God of the text up high.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's exactly what CJ did.
Okay.
There's no doubt about it. I'm not making commentary on CJ's.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that I had to catch myself thinking this is, you know, I love to analyze sermons. I like to listen to sermons because it's what I do. I want to hear how guys do it. And I found myself saying, that's brilliant.
Right.
No, wait a minute.
Yeah.
No, the text is far more impressive.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying.
Okay.
And you'll just develop your own conviction of how you want to package things. And some guys are really good at having an amazing ability to package a sermon, a proposition statement and sermon. You know, it's always plural noun. There are four convictions that the Christian must hold to stay near to Christ. Conviction number one, that's easy, that's memorable. My problem with some of those plural noun propositions like that is not every single... That turns it almost into a utility. Every passage was written as a utility to give you four things to do, five things to avoid, two things to remember. And that's very pragmatic. And I'm not sure that every passage was written with that intent. So my concern then is at some point the sermon begins to almost kind of make you think differently, could potentially make you think differently about the passage than it actually was written for. I can say there are three means by which we are taken captive. And then I have to decide, okay, how is that really
exactly zeroed in on what he is after here? Or is that a part of something bigger that he's after? How do I want to communicate that? So that when people come back, do I want them, because my sermon served them, to make them think a certain way about this passage? Those are just things you got to think through. And I encourage you to develop, you know, your conviction on what you think. And if I take a piece from a very big thing that Paul's after, and I emphasize it through my sermon like it's everything, and somebody is shaded in their view then, maybe rightly, wrongly, of a passage, they come back to it. If I did all of this work, they're not going to be led astray to something wrong. God will use it. But the danger might be that they will actually maybe have a kind of, they'll view something minor as being major.
Right.
You know? So, anyway, you just got to think through those things. All right, let me talk to you a little bit about, I talked to Smed about your assignments coming up. You have sermon research due a week from today.
Yeah.
Which is actually the class that we're not meeting on.
Right.
The 22nd. I keep thinking it's the 26th, but it's the 22nd we're not meeting on. So a week from today, you need to turn
in. Oh. Okay. The 22nd we're not meeting.
Yeah, and I don't know why. I think I've said out loud it's the 26th that we're not meeting, but it's the 22nd I can't meet. It's that Friday. So what we're doing tomorrow is we're going to do Psalm 23 together, just okay. So that you don't have to do it. We'll use class time to work that together. And we're going to cover it. We'll make sure everything's covered. But anyway, here's what Smed's looking for in your sermon research. We've been working through all of the steps, right? Here.
Mm-hmm.
Step one, step two. Where is that at? It's after page 22.
Yeah.
25. Part two. Step one, pray. Okay, step two, read your passage.
What page does that start?
That's what's page 26.
Okay.
And you're going to want to also be thinking about the other things in front of this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, diligent investigation, studying words in a text, all of that. But what Smed's looking for is that you have actually, he wants to be able to see that you're working through your steps.
Okay.
For instance, this is not a paper for you to type.
Right.
Okay. This is going to be different.
Don't take extra time.
Yeah. Let's say you've picked your passage. Let's say you're going to do Colossians 2, 8 to 12.
Okay.
What he's going to want you to hand in is obviously all of this that you've done, where you've done your parts of speech and function of sentence. He's going to want you to hand this in. Okay. Let's say you photocopied some pages out of a commentary and you underlined in it and you wrote over in the margin. Great way to summarize this passage, and then you summarize it in your own words based off of what it says. He wants a copy of that page in with this. It's going to be
10,
14, 24 pages of just, here's my stuff.
Raw search. Yeah.
And he doesn't want it in, okay, I've taken all of the observe the syntax, because I'm step three and it's underneath this heading, step three, observe syntax in a paper. I've compiled it all into a nice paragraph. And then in another paragraph, you know, number four, he doesn't want that way. He wants to be able to look through. He's going to be watching with, I've got steps 1 through 11 on my mind. And I saw all of them represented throughout the 24 pages of stuff I looked through. Or he might go through it and say, I didn't see very much word study. It appeared weak. So he's going to be watching. You don't need to have it in order.
Okay.
So if you're a person who really likes to like organize and make a paper, this might bother you that you're going to be kind of just making photocopies of your scribbles.
Sure.
In what you're doing, but hopefully that saves you time.
Yeah.
All he wants to do is just see that you have worked hard to
think through the 11 things. As you're studying, you know, you're going to want to keep these pages, or maybe you're going to want to write out step 3, observe syntax, step 4, you're going to want to have the 11 points in a see them all at once kind of thing, so that you can see that you're covering your bases.
Okay.
So that you're reading through your material in light of, for instance, step 5, consider the author and the audience. At some point in all of your notes, you're going to want to make sure that there's a spot, some place, where you have given evidence that you've been thoughtful about that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Sure. And you don't even need to put a big old star on, this is step 5, but just that you need to be thinking through these things. That's what he wants to see.
He wants copies of your prayer journal and everything.
Got it. Yeah, right.
But I mean, even if you know what, even if you wanted to write out, I'm serious, if you wanted to write out a prayer on it, you could do that.
Sure.
But, or you could just say, before I studied, I paused to pray, and I've been praying throughout. You know, just let them see that you're doing it.
Okay.
You're thoughtful and all those. Does that make sense to
yeah.
you?
Yeah.
Something that might be helpful is when you turn in those notes, even type up just a list on the as a cover page.
Right.
That says, like, this is where this is. Check my whatever. So that way it's accountability for you that you did them all.
Yeah, even if you mean like, so if you typed out all 11 steps.
Yeah, just or type, you know, prayer, and then just put in parentheses, I did this on my own, or you can find this in like on a commentary, on a page of a commentary, or, you know, because if you're turning in just a big bunch of pages, maybe for your own sake and for Smedley's sake for grading it, you can kind of tell him where you have everything.
I think I could speak for him on this, because I asked specifically about that. You don't need to
not
do
even that.
Not even do that. He's just very willing to just have you turn in what you're wrong.
Just kind of look through.
But you want to make sure that you've thought about 11 steps.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I think you do. If you did that for him, he would be very impressed. But he's not asking you to do that.
Right.
Because I asked him 3 times. I said, okay, I'm going to ask you one more time. Because
yeah.
I would think that you should probably turn it into a paper, your sermon research. But that's
sure.
what he wants. And that's wonderful.
Well, that is helpful time-wise,
yeah.
especially with the next
right.
paper due so soon.
Right.
Yeah.
And let's talk about that next paper. You have your problem passage that is due July 26th. He would, if you're okay with just doing Hebrews 6, 4 to 8, he would like for you to do that.
Yeah.
So that way you don't have to take any time and try to find another passage
right.
or whatever. He said if you did have another passage and you want to run it past me or even text him, you're more than welcome to do that.
Okay.
But just Hebrews 6, 4 to 8, and you just do it exactly the same way as the other one.
Okay.
Awesome. So no new news on that, but you're just going to go for that that way. He'll be back on July 29th. He's going to be covering on July 29th pages 23 to 25 in the process. Of the preparation process. And that's the New Testament use of the Old Testament. And I'm going to do a little pre-thing to that on Tuesday the 26th.
Okay.
And so you'll be able to ask him on your sermon manuscript.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be able to ask him some questions on that. Okay?
Okay.
So you should be in good shape. Do you have any questions, Zach, on the research or on the next problem passage or anything like that that we can try to answer?
We didn't do for the first one, the Judges passage, we didn't do line diagramming like this just because it was so long and
yeah.
it's a narrative, so it wasn't as beneficial. Since this is shorter,
yeah.
let's do
yeah, I would
both
go ahead and
the
diagram.
Block and the line.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would do that on this one. And if you want, we can spend some time, you know, depending on how much we do tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
We only have one page to cover in the notebook here.
Mm-hmm.
If we want to spend some time, you know, starting to do that, we can certainly do that too. I'm all for helping you out. Zach McCallie is on his own. has to find his own time to do it.
Got it, yeah.
That's his punishment for not being here today.
Yeah.
There's grace with Jesus, but it's all law here.
Yeah.
So, just kidding. All right.
All right.
So, there you have it. I don't even know, what time is it?
It's 8:10.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
We're done. Okay.
Yeah, I need to.